Techno Progressivo. You are listening to Techno Progressivo on 101.9 CITR in Vancouver.
Welcome to Techno Progressivo. I'm DJ Wah, and you're listening to 101.9 CITR in Vancouver. I'm proud to work and live on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. Techno is in the air tonight, and I've got a great interview feature from local producer Joel West, which we'll get to shortly. But let's kick things off with a banger here from Eli Brown. This is titled Believe. Enjoy this. Okay, a great track of the week there. It's Eli Brown, the title is Believe, and it's out now on Filth on Acid. On to the feature for tonight's episode. Joel West is a local producer and DJ, and I was able to connect with him to talk production, establishing himself in the city, and where he wants to take his brand to techno going forward. Full track list, as well as a collection of Joel West web links, can be found on the Techno Progressivo Facebook page. Let's check out part one of the interview. This is DJ Wah speaking to Vancouver-based DJ and producer Joel West. He's been producing for over a decade with releases on Resilient, Kiko Records, No Match, and his own Groundwork Recordings, just to name a few. He's been a longtime resident at Gorgamish and has done loads of other gigs around the city, as well as most of the festival circuit for Western Canada. His latest release, Pulse Response, came out on February 25th on Groundwork. It's my pleasure to be speaking to him. This is Joel West. To begin with, how do you define your sound?
How do I define my sound? I would call it a bouncy, fun, accessible techno, but with an edge to it, a cheeky edge to it. I can definitely go dark and heavy as well, but I like to bring people in, and I like to make sure people are having fun and smiling.
Okay, and when you were younger, did you have any musical training that helped you out as you got into this as an adult?
Yes, absolutely. I was taking music lessons from a young age, but never really got serious about like piano lessons or I did a few guitar lessons, but didn't have either the inclination or the people around me to start a band, but was lucky enough to be involved in a lot of theater and musical theater as a kid. So I got a lot of training in music through doing musicals. So I developed a really good musical ear through that. And then just as we all do, grew up loving music and then moved to Montreal and started going out clubbing. And my love for music and a bit of my training started to meet my love for this new love for electronic music. And I said, well, hey, I don't have to have a band and have four or five other people to rely on and try and coordinate. I can be a DJ.
And did you start off DJing in Montreal, or was that something you started up once you moved to Vancouver?
It took a few years after that. I would say I definitely got into the scene going out in Montreal. My first gig was actually in Guelph, Ontario, after I left Montreal. I was in Montreal to go to post-secondary school. When I got to Guelph, Ontario, I bought my first set of deck and then played out for the first time at a place called The Cornerstone in Guelph. I don't know if it's still there or not. It was like a restaurant that did DJ nights. And train wrecked every single transition and absolutely loved it and was totally hooked from that moment on.
And when you first moved to Vancouver, can you just describe what the process was like of trying to establish yourself as a DJ and a producer in this city?
So I've been in Vancouver 10 years. I'd spent 4 or 5 years back in my hometown of Nelson, BC, where Shambhala happens every year. I left a very warm and involved, I was very involved with the community there. I was running my own shows. I was booking outside talent. I had my own radio show. I didn't pay cover everywhere. I knew everybody. I was going out all the time, playing a bunch of times every month, and then got to Vancouver and had to start all over again and had none of that. It kind of really took a little while for me to, like, at first it was a little bit of almost a depression, kind of like, you know, feeling the loss of that. But then I started the Groundwork Project kind of from feeling lonely after leaving such a great community and wanting to find a new way to create community, because I figured I'm probably not the only person that feels that way. And I know that as a DJ and producer, a lot of the work is solo. And so we don't really have the record stores to connect in the way that we used to, because everything is digital and online. So I thought creating a space for people who are involved in electronic music to meet and to rub elbows and to meet each other would be a really powerful thing. And that's lasted 7 years.
And with COVID essentially shutting down live shows for the last couple of years, what have you had to do to get your mixes and your music out to people?
Well, what I did during COVID is I absolutely doubled down on my releases. I hadn't released a lot before COVID, actually. And during COVID, I really went on a spree. In the last year, year and a half, I've released 40 or 50 tracks. And that's a lot. I just moved into production and really, really worked on getting my sound up to par and kind of took a bit of a risk and was like, you know what, I'm gonna work it. Like, maybe nothing will be a hit right out of the gate, so I'm gonna work on creating my back catalog, and I'm gonna be willing to fail in public and not hide anymore, and just put stuff out and see how it goes and kind of improve in front of people. So that was my goal during COVID.
Okay, when you are producing music, which DAW do you work with and why?
I work with Logic because it's what I kind of graduated to in about 2007. I jumped up to that because a friend of mine was recommending it, and I was ready for something that was kind of more fully fledged and professional. And I work in the Apple ecosystem, so it works very well with that. I love the sound of it. I can't explain the nerdy kind of sound engineer end of it, but there is some actual stuff with the Sonics that are a little different with Logic. They all have their own kind of sonic fingerprint, and I happen to really like Logic's, and it just works really well for me. I can work very quickly. I can confidently book a session at Northern House Studios for 4 hours and come out and know I'm going to come out of there with a new song that I'm usually done in about 3 hours or 3.5 hours. At this point, I'd rather stick with that than learn a new DAW.
When you are producing tracks and you only have a 4-hour time window, do you generally have an idea in your head before you begin making it, or do you go into the studio and just hope that something comes out within that 4-hour time frame?
I muck around and I trust the process. I have a process that works for me. It's a subtractive process. I create a loop and a groove, and I fill everything in, and I actually start mixing on that loop, and then I drag it all out to 6 minutes or 6.5 minutes, 7 minutes, and I start to subtract. So I look at it like looking at a sculptor looking at a big chunk of marble and then revealing the statue out of that. I have an idea of maybe the tone or the BPM I want to work at, or like what label maybe I'd be targeting, but I have no idea what's about to happen.
Okay, when you're working in Logic, do you use mostly their VSTs, or do you have a collection of external ones that you like to use? And how often do you use external gear as well?
So yes, yes, and yes. I love Logic's onboard VSTs and plugins, processing plugins. Their Alchemy synths is absolutely brilliant. I use it a lot. I use the sampler all the time. I bought third-party samples to load into that, of which I have a ton of kicks and a ton of drum sounds, especially for the sampler. And I have a lot of third-party external processing plugins. My favorite, absolute favorite, is Soundtoy's Decapitator. It's a saturation distortion plugin, and I use it on everything. So yes, I love Logic stuff. I think it works really well. The EQ I really love. The compressor always goes on my master, just the generic Logic compressor, because it's so transparent. And then I do have outboard gear. I've got about 11 or 12 synths here from like the pre-MIDI RS9 from Roland, which is a string and organ synth, which I use to make my track bounce, right up to the new Drum Brute Impact that I used on Gaining Ground that got released on No Match this past year from Turkey. And I have a Behringer Neutron and a Behringer Poly-D and the 303 clone, and right now I'm borrowing a Behringer Cat. I've got a Korg Arp Odyssey. I've got all kinds of stuff kicking around here, and so it's a hybrid for me.
Okay, before you started producing as much music as you have over the last couple of years, and thinking way back to the start of your production time, was there some aspect of production that you found particularly challenging?
Yeah, and Ira Glass has a great quote about that, where he talks about you get into an art form because you have great taste, perhaps, but your output does not match your taste. And I think, and it just takes a long time and a lot of repetition, which is part of my goal of putting out all these songs. It's a whole bunch of iteration to get to that point where your output matches your taste. And I'm finally, I can proudly say, at the moment where my output matches my taste. And I would say early on, it's that gap between, I listen to my stuff and I don't know why it doesn't sound like the stuff I like. And I can't tell you why. Now I can tell you why, because I've spent so long at it. I can listen to a song and tell you what's going on in it and how it was made. But back then I couldn't. I just was trying to make something with what I knew. And it really just takes time and iteration to get to that.
Let's talk about your Groundwork recording label. You mentioned already that it's 6 years old, and how has that experience been over that period of time, both the good and the bad?
I would say the good, especially this year. So initially it came out of the Groundwork meetups, the listening parties, the monthly listening parties that we've been hosting since 2015. As a way to promote Vancouver talent of all stripes. And we put out a few releases, and the people I was working on the project with at the time, I don't think they were feeling the label as much as the rest of the social aspect of the project, where myself as a DJ and producer, I was really feeling the label, but we didn't quite agree on everything. So the label kind of ended up always being the last thing on the agenda, and it kind of fell to the wayside for a few years. And then in this last year of, maybe 2 years of high output, I was like, I'm going to revamp the label and I'm going to focus it again. I'm going to include people from outside of Vancouver, which we're about to start to do. And I'm going to really narrow the focus down to techno because it's my passion and it's what I love and it's what I play, it's what I produce. And let's be real honest, until you're at the very, very top, there's really no money in running a label. In fact, it can be a money pit. So if I'm going to spend money running a label and putting people's music out and my own music out, it's going to be focused on what I love so that it keeps me motivated. And with that, we've had some success with my own releases and with other artists that we've put out. And we've been charting on Beatport this year with pretty much every release since I've revamped the label. We've hit the Raw Deep Hypnotic charts and made it into the top 10 several times. And right now, even just today, we started charting, and I know with some of the sales that all the artists are driving for Pulse Response and the remixes, we're probably going to start climbing tomorrow. So I'm looking forward to waking up in the morning and checking the Beatport charts.
Okay, let's shift over to the DJing side of things. When you are performing live, what's the setup that you prefer to use, like CDJs, Traktor, Serato, or some other thing, and why?
I have a bias against having a big screen, like a laptop, in the booth, because it reminds anybody who's looking at that has a subtle psychological signal that this person could be checking their Facebook, or it could also, it says work to a lot of people, and people are there to forget work. Also, DJs kind of get laptop face, and they're just like absorbed in the laptop. So that's my own bias. I played Serato for many years. I'm really glad to not play Serato anymore and be on CDJs. I like 3 to 4 CDJs and a nice big mixer. One of the big pioneer mixers are an Allen and Heath. I love USB keys. I think traveling with that and not having to carry records is just fantastic. And how much music you can carry with you very easily, and how you can sneak that in past airports and past borders very easily.
Discorder, that free magazine from CITR, has been documenting the best in music, arts, and culture since 1983. Let's see what one man of prestige has to say about Discorder.
What up, though? This is Big Snoop Dogg, and I fucks with Discorder magazine. How about that?
Smoke weed every day.
Pick up a copy around Vancouver or f*** with Discorder online at discorder.ca.
You are checking out the Joel West interview here on Techno Progressivo. His track Cabin Fever closed out the first half of the interview, and one called Machine Ideology kicks off the second part. Full track list, along with a collection of Joel West web links, can be found at Techno Progressivo's Facebook page. Let's see what he has to say in part two of the interview. Okay, how do you approach programming a set? You mentioned that you'd like to have 3 or more decks on the go, and when that's the case, do you generally have stems or acapellas or other musical elements playing? What do you do?
Sometimes I would mix on 3, but really I'm prepping stuff. I'm getting stuff ready, and it allows me to work more quickly than just working back and forth on 2. And having a safety is how I approach it. I still tend to use 2 as I did with 2 turntables as I was learning. Every once in a while, yeah, there's another element you're looping or adding in. I found being a vinyl DJ was very important and informs my programming very much. My record crate, which I'm still looking at, my original record crate only held 40 records, and that was enough to do 3 or 4 hours. And I like to still think that way in terms of packing crates, even though it's digital. So I make different playlists, and they tend to be between 10 to 40 records or tracks per playlist. And what I do is I organize them by energy. So when I play Gorgamish and I do a 3-hour set, I will have 5 different playlists, and they will be for different sections of the night of my set by energy. And so I just throw stuff in the appropriate playlist, and that's how I pack my USB stick, my crate, so to speak, for the evening. And I don't know what I'm going to play. I obviously can't play everything I've picked. I want to have way more music than I'm going to need so that I have choice. I know maybe 3 or 4 or 5 songs that I want to play that night. I don't know when I'm going to play them. It's going to depend on the room or even if I get to them. Like last Friday night, I played Gorgamish, and I knew I wanted to play my new release. I knew I wanted to play some tracks that I just collabed on with some friends of mine, and I did that, two or three different tracks from them, but I didn't know when I was going to play them. It's a lot of improvisation and reading the room.
And do you know your tracks inside out before you do a gig, or do you still have some tracks you're uncertain about as you're getting ready to perform?
I used to know my music. I've gotten lazy recently. But there's a bit of a cheat. I find that since I've been a producer, I know what to listen for, and I know how to trust other producers. So I listen to a track for energy. I check the breakdown. I check, you know, that there's not a weird vocal that comes in at 4 minutes that I didn't anticipate. But a track's, you know, it's pretty, I wouldn't say paint by numbers, but like things happen every 8, 16, 32 bars. I don't have to know my music as well, but I do pay very careful attention to the energy. So I know if I'm pulling from a, you know, peak time bouncy folder, I know that the music's, I can trust myself in making that selection and having done the work ahead of time, that I don't have to know the song as well, as long as I check in and go, yep, this is the song that's next in the headphones.
Okay, let's take a look back at your career. Are there any events or clubs that you've absolutely loved to play at and are hopeful or optimistic to play at again sometime in the future?
I'm just waiting to confirm playing in Montreal at the end of March, and I believe the person behind the gig might be the owner of Stereo. It would be a gig outside of Stereo, so creating that relationship and playing that venue, whatever that might be, would be incredible. A lifelong dream for me would be to play, and I'm probably going to mispronounce this, but Gasfouter in Amsterdam, which is an old converted gas plant that holds about, I don't know, 4,000 or 5,000 people, and you know, the fire going off inside, and it's where Awakenings happens during ADE. I got to go there in 2018 and was welcomed into the drum code party and backstage and all of that, and I got to meet a lot of the people there, a lot of big artists, and be right behind the DJ booth and watch what was happening during the show. To play on that stage would just be, you know, a real bucket list item. I love playing at Gorgamish. I think it's a fantastic club in Vancouver. I think it's a real world-class venue. And I have a memory of playing at Y After Hours in Edmonton. And the reason why this one sticks in my head is because it felt like it was a club. This was only a couple years ago, but it felt like it was a club out of like 1997. Like just the decor, and I mean this in a really good way. I mean this with a lot of love. It felt like a stepping in back in time in rave history. And yet, being in the DJ booth, the sound was so incredibly clear from the monitors that I barely touched my headphones. And I've never experienced that before. And so it sticks in my head. So I'd love to go back there and play because it was a lot of fun.
Okay. And then on the flip side of that, have you ever had a gig go horribly wrong for you? And do you feel like sharing that?
So many. I mean, if you're in this for any amount of time, you're going to have bad gigs. You know what? One I had, and it was back when I was in Nelson, and I was playing Serato with turntables to control it. And a young guy, he was probably just legal to get into the bar, or maybe not even. I was playing house music, and he's like, "Let me rap over what you're doing. I'm a sick MC. Give me the microphone, bro." And I'm like, "Sorry, no, we don't know each other, and like, I booked this gig, and no thank you. I'm sure you are, but no thank you." And he kind of kept at me, and I kept less and less politely turning him down as he kept at me, as I'm playing, by the way. And so he eventually got so frustrated that he grabbed my turntable arm and pulled it off the record. And so I just leapt over the decks and chased him out the club and down the block. I would not have done anything. I just wanted to scare the bejesus out of him.
Okay, a hard question here, but looking back on your body of work, can you tell me one or two tracks that you're most proud of producing and why?
I have one or two that are the best I've done, and I have some I'm really proud of as well that aren't the best, maybe aren't the best I've done. I'm actually really proud of some work I'm doing right now with a couple of different artists, local artists, like Tacoma and Cameron St. Denis, which you will hear forthcoming. We're just shopping them out to labels. Also, Bryn Lytle from Northern House Studios in Gastown. Also have some collaboration music that will be forthcoming that we're shopping out to labels right now that I'm really, really, really proud of and excited to be out there in the world. And I've been playing in my sets and the reaction's really good. These are some of the tracks that have come out in like 3.5 hours, and they've been fully formed and ready to go. Stuff that's already released, I would say, I'm really proud of I'm Free on Groundwork, which is I actually submitted to the Junos, which I don't know when this is going to air, but we may know by then whether or not I ended up getting nominated, because the announcement for at the time of recording is tomorrow on who gets nominated. So, but that track I'm really proud of. And when I sent it to my mastering engineer, he sent back a huge thumbs up because he thought it was one of my best mixdowns ever. And I love the track and the message. So I'm proud of that one. Really proud of a track called Mean Streets that just came out on Resilient Recordings. I'm really proud of a track called Choisi, which came out on Redefine last year, which I haven't actually played out yet, but I'm going to play out this Saturday in Vancouver. There's so many, and I love all my babies.
And then can you name one or two DJs or producers whom you really admire and why?
I'm so proud of everyone. Like on the Pulse Response EP, their single that just came out, I have 4 remixes on there, and those are my best friends. And I am so proud of the work that they did. Son of Magnus, who's a new kind of enigmatic producer from the Vancouver area. My absolute best friend and techno brother, The Goat Music. And Francesco Rosa put out his first release with his remix. He's a really good friend of mine. Kevin Humphrey from Record Works also did an absolutely stellar remix. So to be inspired by all your friends and to work with all your friends and to come together on a project and create something that didn't exist before is just a feeling like no other. So I'm really inspired by those people right around me, and the Groundwork project really allowed that to happen for these people who would be working on their own in their, you know, their studios or their bedroom or wherever it is they're working alone on their laptop. We all got to meet, and now we're all working together. That's hugely powerful. So those people inspire me. I'm really liking, I've played out a bunch of tracks from her new label, Shelly Johansson, from Toronto. She's absolutely amazing, incredible talent, and a really nice person too. I've worked and they've remixed me. They master my stuff as Mastercraft from out east. I work with them. Also really nice people. And internationally, I really liked the sounds of Elisa B has really been catching my ear lately. I love a lot of the artists on the label Needed Pains, which is Dance and Pika's label, which I actually got to release on last summer, which I'm really proud of because it was kind of a bucket list label for me. And it was as easy as sending a message to Dance and Pika and saying, hey, can I send you some music? And they said, sure, of course you can. Definitely a lot of techno artists to kind of focus it again, yeah.
Okay, and then what is your vision for yourself, both in production and in DJing?
Yeah, that's a great question. Production-wise, I would like to continue to collaborate as much as possible because I'm finding that to be so richly rewarding to work on music with other people who have a very similar vibe and vision. I didn't know if it would be quite possible because I've definitely had sessions where it doesn't really gel and you kind of walk away without that that same drive and energy about the project. But I've been really vibing on the last round of stuff, and I'm looking forward to doing that more and more, and not only with people here, but maybe people around the world. So that's what I'd like to do production-wise. But DJing, I'd like to play more internationally. I'd like to play in Europe. I'd like to play in South America. All of those things were kind of almost happening, and then just kind of the last gasps of COVID and all the restrictions we've been living under, some of the things didn't end up happening for the spring that looked like they might. People are starting to ask me to go different places, so I'm looking forward to that continuing and that accelerating, and with further releases, creating more and more opportunity to do that, because that's kind of my goal, to be going to where techno is really loved and to join that community of people who are doing it at a really high level.
Okay, and then as we wrap up here, is there anything that you wanted to promote right now?
I would just love to promote the label. You can follow it on Instagram at Groundwork Techno. Groundwork is spelled like Crackwork, W-E-R-K. That's important to note if you're searching for it. You can also find it on Beatport and iTunes and Spotify and all of the different places. Definitely give me a follow, Joel West Music on Instagram. I would love that. Keep an eye out if you're in the Vancouver area for any shows I'm playing. I'm playing one this Saturday, but I'm sure I've got an upcoming show whenever you're hearing this, I probably have something coming up. You can look out for me at Gorgamish and Gorgamish After Hours in Vancouver. And I'd just like to give a big shout out to The Goat. We're going to release his album on Groundwork, full album, not just an EP, but I believe it's 12 or 13 songs, as well as some remix packages with some fairly heavy-hitting global artists involved in the remix packages. So keep an eye out for that later in the spring, early summer. We actually got a grant from Creative BC to do some promo and to hire artists. So thank you to them to give this thing a little more legs. And he poured 2 years into this album, and it's really his heart and soul is in there, and the music is incredible. And it really runs the gamut from a lot of dance floor driven techno to more melodic yet industrial vocal tracks to one track that's even like deep grimy old UK dubstep, and then some ambient stuff thrown in there. So it's just an incredible journey that he's created, and I'm really looking forward to releasing that on the label.
This has been Joel West. A selection of Joel West tracks can be found at Beatport, Apple Music, Juno Download, TrackSource, and Bandcamp. Additionally, a full list of Joel West web links can be found on the Techno Progressivo Facebook page, so thank you very much for doing this.
Without the help and support of our friends, we here at CITR wouldn't be able to bring you all the great music, art, cinema, and culture that you love. Thanks to the long-standing support from the Rio Theater, we are able to keep you informed on all the great artists, films, and everything else coming to town there. For all the current information about who and what's playing at the Rio Theater, visit their website at www.riotheater.ca.
We are all done for another episode of Techno Progressivo. Thank you so much to Joel West for agreeing to interview. Another great example there of just how good the local underground scene here in Vancouver is. I would strongly encourage you to head over to Techno Progressivo's Facebook page to check out his web links and the track list from the show. So get on that. If you've enjoyed the show and want to check it out again, go to the Techno Progressivo show page at CITR.ca or Apple Podcasts for this episode, along with other great interviews and guest mixes from days gone by. Up next on the station is Attic Jam, so check that out to see what they have in store for you. Before we go, though, let's do as we always do and set the controls in the time machine for this episode's Track from the Past. Let's hop back 16 years in time to 2006 for one from Swiss producer D-Tron. He's made some amazing tracks over the year, including this one. This is Afterlife. Enjoy, and I will see you back here in 2 weeks.